Welcome to the podcast that unveils the future of investing. Today, your host George Alifaris speaks to Joe Downey, the CMO of NiceHash, a leading cryptocurrency mining and trading platform.
Welcome to the podcast. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Joe Downey, the CMO of NiceHash, a leading cryptocurrency platform for mining and trading. Joe, welcome. Great to have you here.
Thank you. Glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me to your podcast.
Wonderful. So can we start by just having an overview of mining? I think we've all heard of crypto. We all have images of mining. What is it that we're really talking about and how has it evolved?
So cryptocurrency mining is the backbone, if you like, of cryptocurrency. A lot of the time, the mining side is a little bit left in the shadows. They don't tend to hear about it in day-to-day conversations so much until quite recently. But mining is essentially a mathematical algorithm that you are calculating, your computer is calculating hashes in order to solve the equation and get the closest to the block. And then you receive the block reward. And the block reward is how the cryptocurrency is created, if minted. So it's through this process of computational hashes that you can, that the currency is then minted.
Sure. But yeah, it's really the backbone. And without mining, there's no transaction, there's no crypto. So indeed, it's a fundamental that perhaps we hear less about. But I'd like to go to my initial image of mining. I see basically baby basement with rows of computer. Maybe it's influenced because I've seen the episode of Billions where they show that. Is this kind of what we're talking about? Is this related to what NiceHash is providing?
Yeah, that depends. There are lots of aspects of mining. Those images are definitely real. There's a lot of mining is done on a big scale. So you have, people will pack either basements or warehouses or even specifically created locations for mining. And they just fill them with the mining machines. This is big mining farms, as we call them. But then you also have people who are just mining on their own computers. So that's what NiceHash is mostly about. We basically connect up a lot of devices to our platform, and then we forward their computing power to buyers on the other side, who then buy this computing power. So we actually have a lot of gamers who are mining because the graphics cards from your gaming computer can be used to mine cryptocurrency. So a lot of what NiceHash does is near GPU mining.
Right. So that's why you also say you're a power bro, and you use the GPUs from, in particular, gamers. And we're going to talk about NVIDIA later. NVIDIA was a previous guest on the podcast, so we've discussed about the difference between GPUs and CPUs. So can you explain to us a little bit more how it works? How do you connect those gamers or people who have spare computing power at home to transform it into mining currency?
So basically, NiceHash is, as you said, it's a broker. So we basically sit in the middle. We provide the software. So if you're a gamer, you have a computer, let's say as an example, you have a good graphics cards like NVIDIA 3070 along those lines. You download our software, it's free. And so this software then connects your computer up to our platform and starts submitting what we call mining shares. So this is the mining that's happening in the background on your computer. And these are then forwarded to our open marketplace. And on the open marketplace, the buyers can then bid based on the algorithm that they want to mine. So for example, a lot of mining is on Ethereum at the moment, on the GPU side. So the buyer will then come in and say, okay, I want to mine Ethereum, I want to buy this much hash rate, and then they bid for the price against the other bidders on the marketplace. And once they get the order, they can forward this to a mining pool, which is basically a bigger collection of miners, which is often used in order to increase the chance of getting a block reward by pooling the mining computing power together. And so that's basically what we do.
All right, so let me try to really put it into practice with a specific simple example. So I'm doing a transaction as a user on Ethereum, and there's a cost, Grays, and it's typically high. That's a problem with Ethereum, but let's take it through. So then what happened next? So it has to be mined, right? Because I'm not going for an exchange. I'm doing it on chain. So can you just walk us through the process and where NiceHash fits into that and then where the gamers' computers fit into that?
Yeah, if you're sending Ethereum to another person, let's say, so that's going through the blockchain. And what the miners are doing in the background is validating this transaction. They're verifying that the Ethereum that you're sending to, let's say to me, is a real transaction and that you're not trying to double spend the money, because this is the issue that you could have with if there wasn't the blockchain technology. So the miners are there underneath to validate this transaction, to prove that it's genuine. And NiceHash is basically providing a portion of that globally. So we sit there providing hash power to the network in order to validate the transactions.
Right. And then just to link it back to the computing, to the gamer. So this gamer is connected to NiceHash, and therefore, and how does it always on, or does he have to say, okay, now my computer is available for hashing?
Generally, people leave their computers running when they're not using it. So that's one of the advantages with NiceHash, is you can just let it run while your computer is idle, and then you're supporting the network of the cryptocurrency. And you don't have to have it on all the time. You can start and stop anytime. If you're using it for gaming, obviously, or using it for something else, you can just start and stop. And that doesn't affect the overall network, because there are millions of miners all around the world. And that's why you see the hash rate goes up and down. So the more miners you have connected globally, not just at NiceHash, but all over the world, the more miners you have connected, the higher the hash rate on that network. And that also increases the difficulty for the mining, so the rewards are split.
Right. And just to, again, there was a specific example recently with the launch of some NFTs and the huge request on the network for mining, gas fees going much higher. And this is where I guess networks like yours play an important part of the ecosystem, because you help to provide supply to this excess demand that happens at some time on the Ethereum network, right?
Yeah, the Ethereum one is quite particular, because there's quite often spikes on it, like big spikes of hash rate. On Bitcoin, it's more, you tend to see it more go up like steadily and go down steadily, whereas on Ethereum, you do see these big spikes of hash rate.
I would like to try to, in my mind, to really connect this transaction that I made on Ethereum. I sent you some money, and what your user sees in terms of revenue and GPU usage. How would it work in practice? And how much of my ethical case, how much of my transaction goes to, or of my transaction fees goes to the providers of GPU?
So with NiceHash, the way it works is we pay out in Bitcoin, and the miners who are buying as a gamer, if you have the GPU connected up, you're getting paid out in Bitcoin, and the miners who's buying your hash power is the one who is receiving the block reward in Ethereum. So you would always get paid in Bitcoin. We actually pay out every 4 hours. So you get paid for every share that you submit. So all the time that you are connected to NiceHash, you're getting paid for that time, regardless of if the miner on the other side finds a block or not. That's up to them to calculate and to work into their orders when they're buying the hash power.
All right, understood. So basically, yes, it's like delegating to a miner, and then the rewards are dealt with him, and you pay your user for the usage, actually, the success.
Yeah, we basically pay them for the time and the amount of hash rates that they provide to us.
And I'd like to get a picture of the scale. First of all, perhaps, I don't know if you can share the scale overall of that business and industry. And then secondly, how much money can people make individually with a normal computer?
With a normal computer, it depends on the graphics card that you have.
Yes, this I suppose like a good computer, and yes, yeah. Maybe we can go into the specifics.
If you have a decent desktop PC, you can make, with a good graphics card, you can make around 100 euros a month. But this fluctuates a lot. There are lots of factors that come into mining. I would say anything between 30 euros a month and 120 years with one graphics card. The profitability changes based on a few factors. So it's based on the buyers who are buying. So if they're buying more, obviously you're getting paid more revenue, but also the value of the coins. So if the value of the coins are going up and down, certain times it's less profitable in euros value. But that's the important thing to remember. The actual amount of Bitcoin you would get paid is the same.
Understood. So definitely, yes, it's good for the industry if Bitcoin keeps rising. And what about, let's say, the bigger pictures, right? Like how much in total does it represent, or how many users you have? Can you give us an overview?
Yeah, we have of active users, we have around 2.5 million. This drops in the summertime because miners drop off in the summer. This is every year the same cycle. So that's a normal thing to happen. But out of those, we have around 1 million mining every day. So the other ones are just mining a bit, stopping, starting. But of actual users who are mining every day, we have around...
Yes, it's quite an impressive number. And obviously, NiceHash is this company of a significant size. It's just perhaps not on the radar for people who are not specifically in the industry. If we zoom out even further, it applies to multiple currencies, so multiple cryptocurrencies. Is it something that is somehow regulated, or is there some form of oversight? What is the framework?
So the mining side is generally very open, so there's no big regulations apart from in China, where they basically banned it or tried to ban it. Didn't really work, but yeah. Otherwise, it's quite different to the other aspects of crypto, and it's one which is subject to a lot of debates at the moment, because mining is very difficult to regulate, because you have millions of people around the world connecting up with their computers. How do you regulate those? That's the whole point of it. So it's open to anyone to participate. Anyone can be a part of the network. Anyone can support it, and anyone can earn cryptocurrency from it. Where the regulation comes in is after that, it's like after the mining. It's when you have the cryptocurrency, do you treat that as, do you have to be registered as a company, or do you tax it, or all these questions. And every country has different rules, different ideas, different thoughts on how to go about it. But for the actual mining underneath, it's very much open scene.
Understood. In terms of the gaming culture, so it's a significant amount of users, and it seems to me like a no-brainer. I just checked my computer, and I'm not into gaming, and I don't know. It's a good Mac, but it has an Intel something, GPU, I don't know. Anyway, I'm probably not a good candidate. But it seems to be a no-brainer. If I had the right computer, I would like to really passive income. Except, I guess, this cost of electricity and stuff like that. But anyway, right. So I would have to compute that. But it would be a nice passive income. So is it something that's really widespread in the gaming industry? And can you tell us a bit, yes, more about how it works for the gamers? What are the costs? How do they sign?
So, yeah, if you already have a good PC and you've already got a good GPU, then your cost is basically just the electric, because you already have the hardware. So you've got no investment to make. You just basically start with what you have, and you start earning money. And essentially, if you've already got the hardware, it's like free money, because you're just adding something that brings you money. But if you're investing into mining and then want to go into a bigger scale, maybe you want to have two computers or three, or add more graphics cards, then you have what's called a mining rig, where you connect up many graphics cards without actually being in a computer. They're just all separate. And then you have to look a bit closer at the cost of the GPUs and the hardware, and estimate how long it will take you to pay those back from the mining that you'll get. Currently, this is quite difficult because the profits are lower at the moment. But a year ago, or a couple of years ago, or even, you know, 5 years, the further back you go, the more profitable it was, because the cost of the GPUs were much, much cheaper a few years ago. So this is the kind of cost factors you have to look at. In terms of electric, for a gamer who's just got one PC, or even your cost of electric is negligible. It's not going to cost you much more to have that computer running. And computers don't use that much power on their own. It's only when you go to the bigger scale that you're going to have to start to check more closely your electric costs.
Are most people using it as a side? Like they buy their computers for gaming, and then they realize, oh, and I can get that? Or is there a significant portion who say, I'm going to buy a computer for mining, I'm going to go into the mining rig and stuff like that? And I guess they can all use your services, right?
If you have a big GPU farm or mining farm, you can also connect and sell your hash power the same way. But we see a lot of miners start, they've got one computer, or one graphics card. They'll start mining, and very quickly you get hooked. Mining is quite addictive. So once you realize your computer is bringing you money, you think, maybe I should get another one and get a bit more money, and so on and so forth, and quite quickly spirals out of control.
Yes. And I guess it's a lot more fun as well when Bitcoin was at 60,000 versus when it's at 30,000, because, if you're paying Bitcoin, your revenue are...
Yeah, of course, your fiat value is worth more. But that's another factor to really think about with mining is time. This is one of the number one factors that people often don't think about because they're looking at the fiat value. If you were mining and you just held on to your Bitcoin from 5 years ago and you just mine to a wallet, keep all that Bitcoin, just keep it and keep it. And then over those years, the value of Bitcoin has grown so much more, you would end up with a huge profit. Whereas if you're constantly mining and selling all the time, you don't actually make that much because you're relying on the fiat value to bring you your investment. So if you like cash out every week your Bitcoin or hold it for a year or two, there's a massive difference in the amount of revenue you would get back from it.
This perhaps is a good transition to the second aspect of NiceHash, which is you're also an exchange. Is this where it comes from?
So yes, the exchange was added more recently, and that's essentially to allow miners, but also traders who are coming externally as well. But the original concept was to allow the miners to then invest their mined Bitcoin or earned Bitcoin into other cryptocurrencies and to potentially make more with their gains. We built the platform, so it's quite complete. It has really all the trading tools you would need for very advanced trading. So we have stop loss orders, trailing orders, lots of different order types that you can place on there. So if you're mining, you can go straight from your wallet straight onto the exchange platform. And from that, you can then place different orders and say, okay, I'm going to use this Bitcoin I mined to buy Ethereum when it drops to this price, for example. And then you wait and then sell it again and so on and so forth. So that was the original concept. Now it's actually built out into a separate platform. So we have NiceX, a website, which is just trading. So it's there's no mining on that side. It's just for trading cryptocurrencies.
So this is quite an interesting development because so you're basically building a cross-chain, or at least is it only Bitcoin to something, or is it a fully cross-chain? And the second question that comes with is, how did you go about building that? Did you have the same developers' resources that you used initially, or was it something completely new and different?
Yeah, initially, yes. Now we have a dedicated exchange team who work on it. But yeah, initially, yes. And most of the pairs are on Bitcoin or USDT. That's most of the pairs. But you can also come in with fiat, purchase Bitcoin, and then start to trade in this way as well.
All right. And it was really built, the process was, you would say, fairly organic. You thought, oh, there's demand for it from our users, so let's build it. And did you build it gradually? Or did you say, we need to, that's a good, a new profit centers, and let's build it?
Yeah, it was a bit of both. Yeah, it was a kind of gradual thing. At the start, we have a lot of miners who request that they can get paid out in a different coin, for example. But that's not the business model of NiceHash. It's Bitcoin to Bitcoin because of the way the open marketplace works. So the buyers are always bidding in Bitcoin. So that's why the miners get paid out in Bitcoin. But yeah, of course, we want to listen to our users and what they want to have. So we built the exchange function so you can then just swap your coins to another coin instead.
Miners are paid in Bitcoin. Is that kind of a universal thing from miners in Ethereum to other chains?
No, it's very much a NiceHash thing.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, that's one of our unique points, if you like. Most other miners, if they're mining directly, so without NiceHash, you can connect direct pool, for example, then you'll get paid out directly in Ethereum that you're mining. The disadvantage of this is that Ethereum has such high gas fees. So in order to make a withdrawal, you're going to have a huge cost on top of your mining if you want to withdraw from the platform. Whereas with NiceHash, it's always in Bitcoin, and Bitcoin is much
and also easier to transact. Just to get my head again around this ecosystem. So we mentioned there's the chain, the miners, and then the users that you connect with the miners. What separates, let's say, casual users to miners?
Technically, they're all miners because they're all using their computers for mining. Mm-hmm. But yeah, really, the actual sort of miners are the ones who are buying the hash power to mine on their pool, and because they are the ones who get the mined rewards. But they're all considered miners because they're using their computing power to do that. But the main difference is really just the size. If you're a gamer and you're just turning it on, mining here and there, you're just a casual miner, you say. So you're just mining when you're not using your computer. Then once you start to have dedicated computers and graphics cards or even for mining, then it's you're more like serious miner, that you're much more dedicated and focused on tweaking it and adjusting it, and there's a lot more time and effort into maximizing your profits because your machines are fully dedicated to that. So that's more like a what we would consider a miner.
So yeah, so basically validators can also can just aggregate different computers, and it's not a substantial, it's not a difference in essence.
Yeah, proof of work is what we call mining.
Proof of
so work. That's very distributed. So it's yeah, all the computers that provide hash power, they're all validating, they're all contributing to the network security. With something like proof of stake, it's quite different, because then the validators are more centralized. So they're like nodes which have a certain amount of that currency, and they're the ones who are validating. And then if you're contributing to that node, you're basically providing currency in order to prove your stake.
Right. I was confused between the two, having read a lot about proof of stake recently. So indeed, so it's...
Yeah, it's confusing because they're both called validators, which is...
Indeed, it's a lot more concentrated and there's a barrier to access, whereas proof of work, it's much more distributed. Yes. Okay, wonderful. So this is really a great overview of the crypto ecosystem and how it really works in terms of practical things. Now, as we have the privilege of having someone who's the CMO on the show, I'd like to talk a bit about the marketing side of things, and perhaps by starting to what do you see as the main marketing challenge for you?
The biggest marketing challenge we face is constantly evolving regulation. Or no regulation, both are a problem, because things change very quickly. So you can have a campaign running in one country, for example, and then the next day on the news, or this banned, for example, or this is now regulated in this area, and you have to change the whole campaigns and revise everything. So it's very challenging in that sense. That's the biggest challenge for us, because the actual product we're offering is actually very easy to sell, because it's basically you're giving free money to people. So it's not a hard challenge to sell the product. What the challenge is making sure that we're doing it and complying with all the rules and regulations, which obviously we do. So we obviously have to stop start as soon as something new comes in. We've got to make sure that, okay, is this right for this country? For example, our exchange is not available in the United States, mm-hmm. because it's not licensed over there. But it's everywhere. It's most other countries of the world. It's available. So little things like that. This makes a big challenge to our marketing efforts. But as we see it evolving, and there's more clarity coming, especially when this year there's been a lot more focus on governments to put in some regulation. And basically, we're waiting for that to come in so we can have more clarity onto what marketing efforts.
Can you tell us a bit about your main marketing activities, just to get an overview?
Yeah, so we're on a lot of different platforms. So we're on most of your main social media sites. We do our own podcast on YouTube. So we have a Nice Talk, it's called, where we invite other experts from the crypto industry. It's always great to hear from other people and get other ideas, and also to provide some educational platform for our users. A lot of our content is focused on educational content, bringing in people who are new to crypto. This is one of our big focuses. We also try to reach out into gaming communities and to show them, look, you have a computer, start making some money with it. This is one of our big areas of focus.
All right. For example, I see that on YouTube you have 30,000 or more subscribers. Is this something that depends on you directly, the CMO, or how is your content, let's say, structured as part of the overall marketing
activity? Yes, I'm the one who's driving the marketing. We have, obviously, a marketing team who are producing content and looking after all different elements of marketing, advertising, media, PR, etc. But generally speaking, all the campaigns and strategies is done by the CMO.
Is it something that you're able to measure what kind of impact you're having? And maybe it's not just about the sign-up rates, but how do you assess and measure the impact of, let's say, the podcast activity in particular?
That's a complex question, because there are many elements that we measure and many elements that have an impact. One of those obviously is the growth, so the number of users we get from the activities and how much the platform is growing. So we've seen a huge growth in the last year, about almost four times the scale of the company, which is huge. But other things, how much users are staying with us as well, because all this extra educational content gives them more resources to then go and use other products and to try other things in crypto, like the exchange or to investigate a bit more and learn more about the broader crypto industry, and then they stay longer with us. So retention is also a very big...
Yeah, so it's a complete life cycle of the consumer, from joining to stay to perhaps recommending you to other people, etc. A very interesting perspective. So there's one thing as well that I noticed in the news, which struck my took my attention, is there was a story about NVIDIA and NiceHash, and I read the headline, which is a huge defeat of NVIDIA's LHR on GPU graphic cards. So this is something that is very foreign to me, but I'm quite interested into knowing what's happening here. Can you give us an overview?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, this was quite big news recently. But yeah, LHR is the light hash rate, they call it. It's basically a limiter on the GPU, which NVIDIA put in early last year, which limits the this capacity to be used for mining, particularly on Ethereum. So it's means that you basically earn less profits if your card has LHR. So there's a lot of cards that don't, and then there's some that do. So the newer ones tend to have it. So what that means is your mining is a bit less profitable. But various mining software was able to unlock some of this capacity. So most recently it was up to about 80% of the capacity, so bringing the profits up a bit. And then a few weeks ago, NiceHash was able to unlock the whole thing to give you 100% of the hash rate. So that means that an LHR graphics card brings you the same as a regular graphics card. You have no difference anymore. So we basically increased profits for everyone by about 20%. So that's why it was huge.
This is something that's totally okay to do. I suppose NVIDIA is not very happy about it.
Yeah, but that was always going to happen eventually. Coders are coders, and both on the NVIDIA side, there are certain things that people are always going to try to find a workaround. I think they must have known it was going to happen. It was just they just put it there to slow it down.
Yes, so it's a fair game between coders.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, block it on this side. Okay, we managed to unlock it a bit more. Okay, we block it a bit more. Okay, we unlock it again. So that's like a constant.
Okay, that sounds a bit underground, but then that's cool. Let's move on to your outlook. What do you think are the key trends or the things that you're most excited about in this industry?
Yeah, there's a lot of talk at the moment about the Ethereum going to proof of stake. So that's something that will impact mining quite significantly on the GPU side. If that happens, but there's a lot of speculation on it. It's been delayed, I don't know, 5 years now, so who knows if it will.
I thought it was for August happening. This year, no?
You yeah, it was for so? August or this year, but now maybe it's September, and then
okay,
we'll see. I think they have a lot of issues with testing certain elements of it.
And it's a very ambitious change, right?
It's a very ambitious. It's one that's never been done before in the crypto industry, so that's why there's a lot of attention on it. So that's something that we look towards, and obviously have made lots of plans for that when that comes. But one of the most interesting things that will happen in the industry over the next year is what happens with the regulation, because this will really set the scene for what crypto projects will really be able to push themselves to the next level. Now we've seen mainstream adoption has started to come with sort of institutional investment last year, a lot more interest into crypto space. Banks starting to get involved with it, shops starting to accept it a bit more, but there lacks the regulation foundation, so people are still hesitant to really go all in. If you don't know the next day, it's something can happen. So that's it's not really exciting. I cannot say that's the right word for it, because it's not, but it is the key to broader crypto adoption and to making the industry taking it to the next level.
It's not even clear for the regulator, should they, but on the other hand, we see that when there's an opportunity to get involved, just like there was this NFT insider trading, which was not for a huge amount, but it's become such a huge deal, some regulator at least will pounce on the opportunity. Yes, I guess that's a cloud that, and from what you mentioned, you'd say it seems if the cloud disperses, at least if you have clear regulation, that's the best possible outcome rather than no regulation. We don't hope for that.
Yeah, because that brings you it's ironic, because cryptocurrency was, especially Bitcoin, was built from the start to be trustless. You don't need the trust factor. And if you're sending Bitcoin from person to person, you don't need that trust factor, because you have the whole infrastructure which is built for that purpose. But because of the way crypto is going and being used in much bigger projects and institutionalization and into banking and all this, you do need the regulation, because without that, you don't have that trust into it. So it's quite ironic, but that's the direction it's gone.
All right. So big developments coming ahead. So Ethereum merge, potentially, and let's call it a clarification. So you're dealing with an uncertain outlook. Yeah, let's say it's exciting somehow. It makes it.
It is in the long term. Yeah, it is in the long term, because it's really going to open up the industry to more people, and people will be much more comfortable to go out and use Bitcoin and buy Bitcoin or whichever other currencies, if they know that there is some regulatory basis for them, that they have some protection as well. This will be a big factor.
All right, lots to consider. Thank you very much. There's two questions that I traditionally like to ask my guests at the conclusion. The first one is, what would you do if you were to choose a different career?
That's a good question. I would probably be into IT security. I did some certifications on that with IBM a few years ago. Started going a bit more towards the web development side of things. But I'm happy where I am.
I wasn't expecting that. Definitely.
Yeah, I was doing more and more branding for companies, helping companies to grow and expand, is a lot of my background. And as part of that branding, I got more involved into sort of the what goes on behind the scenes. And from that, you get more interested in security. And so it opens up. It's a bit like mining. It opens up a whole new world.
And last question, how do you invest personally?
That's the only way to invest.
Okay. That's a very good answer. Joe, thank you so much. We will put the link to all the resources that NiceHash is producing, you're producing, on the link on the show notes. And I wish you all the best.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.